Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the fifth edition of Bitter Radio. Bitter Radio is meant to be a place for the voice of the Bitter mashup remix artists. A lot of the work created by these artists are visual, and it's rare that you actually get to hear what goes on behind the scenes in the process of creating these visual works. And today's Bitter Radio is going to be an interview, just like our past shows. And the person we're going to be interviewing is the visual artist behind Cinema 2009. As you probably have seen in our Facebook page. Yes, and the person is here with me. His name is Kays von Dijkhuizen.
Yeah, that's right.
He's just making sure that I pronounced it right. So I also, there are a couple of logistical things to let you know about. I have a friend who's listening who's on Instant Messenger, and he's the person who actually is the one of the reasons for this show actually happening. So I want to give a shout out to him, and that's Ballistic. He actually suggested Kays as a guest, and I happened to be up late at night, like at 3 a.m, and then he replied back by email, and then I was like in conversation with him, and he was really cool about just being ready to go and just doing it, like actually, you know, just from a couple of days ago, this week that we talked about it. So welcome and thank you for being on. And before we start, let me just give you give the audience a proper introduction into your work for anyone who didn't read the show page and have a background about the work that you did.
Yeah.
Kays von Dijkhuizen is a 16-year-old editor. Yes, that's right, he's 16. I'm not talking to his father.
Yeah. No, I'm sick, everyone. That's why I sound like a 30-year-old man. But I'm really 16. I'm not a fraud. I'm really 16.
Yeah, so he's from The Hague, Holland, and he is currently still in school but hopes to pursue a career in the film business later on. His most acclaimed work up until now has been Cinema 2009, which has not only received nearly 500,000 views. Well, that was at the time you wrote the description, but
I think I gotta change that, actually.
Yeah, I think you're up to like 600,000.
Yeah, it's 650, actually.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yep.
So 662, I see. 662.
Yes. And as you know, for anyone who's on YouTube, numbers are very important, so you can say that.
Yeah.
But beyond those views on YouTube, it was also screened at a gathering in front of over 400 producers, directors, distributors in the cinema. Pat Tuschinski? You can help me with that one.
Pat Tuschinski.
Very good.
Yeah.
And that's in Amsterdam. The video was also featured on various movie blogs such as Joe Blow, Slash Film, and the Cinema Blend. Kays has also designed various titles and websites for multiple parties. Most recent design is the website for the Dutch band Johnny's Landing. And he's also a writer for Dutch film website Filmorama.
Yeah, that's right.
Great. So welcome and thank you for being our guest on the show.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Well, one of the things I wanted to start off just even asking you is how did you even get into this?
I've been thinking about that a lot lately too. All I can remember is that I bought this special edition of The Aviator by Martin Scorsese, and it had this demo disc with editing software, and I wanted to subtitle the Harry Potter trailer. I have no idea why I wanted to do that, but I just wanted to do that. So that's really the first time I actually used editing software, and I started making this intro to just as sort of a logo, and well, kind of from there I just started editing, and my first trailer I think was King Kong, and I liked it so much just doing it, just having the feeling that I did something back for that movie because I really liked that one. So I've been editing ever since, really.
And so if it was it the sense that you were able to create something that was very dramatic? Because I've seen all your videos on YouTube, and they're mostly, and I think all of them are trailers. Was it like...
I started off, like I said, subtitling, and just making a trailer straight away is pretty hard because, you know, there's sort of a path you need to follow to make a good trailer, and I didn't know that path, so I kind of made, there were more music videos, I guess, so I started with music videos, but they sort of evolved into trailers because I had the titles, the this summer things, you know, and the trailer music. So I just started editing trailers back then. But I also still really like the music videos because, Cinema 2009 is, of course, it's really a music video. It's not really a trailer. Though some people have been saying it's a big trailer. I don't really see that. I don't really see it as a trailer.
Okay. And what video editing software do you currently use?
Right now I use Final Cut Pro, but I started off with Magix Movie Maker. It's called here. I think it's called Magix Video Editor outside of Europe, but I'm not sure. Something with Magix.
Right. I've heard of that software. I think I'm familiar with it. And one of the things I also noticed in watching all your videos, that I think is really great, and I don't know how you do it, is sometimes when you see videos on YouTube, most of the videos are usually to one or two songs at the most. But in your trailers, you can have like three or four different songs. What is the process involved? And how is it for you having to choose those songs? I take it that adds time to you, like trying to pick the right song.
Yeah, I really the thing that made me want to do the first one in this series, which was 2008, is because I heard the dramatically overused Sigur Rós song. I don't know how to pronounce it. Hoppy Bulbar or something. With all the chimes and stuff.
Okay.
And I really liked that song. I heard it in a trailer for Earth, I think. And I thought, well, it'd be pretty cool to add movie footage to this. So I did that. I downloaded a couple of trailers, and I just started editing to that. But I was like, well, this is not enough. Like, I just upload this. You know, there are like 1,000 other people who have already done that. So I wanted to make something that, that could just like only come from me. So I added, I think, four songs. Yeah, no, three songs, actually. So I just added three sort of segments dividing 2008 in different genres and just, you know, paying tribute to all. And for 2009, it was a bit harder because, you know, because I really had to do it because... 2008 was pretty much finished when I actually started, you know, saying that it was coming up. But 2009, I actually made a promo with a song I just discovered, and I didn't really realize it. But when I uploaded that, I was like, oh wait, I really have to do this now. And I've been working on it, but I hadn't really found the right songs yet. So I was really glad when I just discover them. I think it was the Death by Wildlife, which I discovered first. And when I heard it, I just saw movie footage, in my head. So I was like, well, this could really work. And I started editing, and it really did work, actually. And from there on, I just, I don't really know how I do it.
I just
experiment, a lot of experimenting.
Yeah, because I saw the promo, and the promo is almost completely different from
yeah.
The promo stands on its own as something that's really good on its own.
Thank you. But it's a lot smaller, I think.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot more intimate and something which, well, Cinema 2009 is in comparison to 2009. I tried to make it really personal and dynamic and small, but it just ended up, well, as another big epic video, really. But the promo doesn't have that because it's, I think it's 1 minute, so
yeah,
I don't really have that big build-up I need to have in 7 minutes. But I really like it, though. It's sort of a standalone video. So
another quality of your videos that I notice that you're very good at, and it's obvious when you're not good at it because it really messes up, or it's really noticeable, I would say, is you're able to blend the dialogue in and have the music come in. And it sounds like, for me, that there needs to be a balance for when you need to lower the music so people can hear the dialogue and then get the music back up to go back with the flow of the video. Is that really difficult to do? Like, what's involved in that?
Well, it's really just tricks. You know, you learn that as you go along. I think when I started, I just had music playing and I just put dialogue over it. But as you sort of improve video-wise, I think you really improve audio-wise. I think that's a really underrated aspect of these videos, is that the audio is, it's often really bad. When I see things on YouTube, I just think, you know, how could you have missed that? I mean, it's just ridiculous how some people think that something works and it just really doesn't.
Right.
And I have a lot of friends who do music and stuff. So I'm into, a friend of mine is also doing music recording, so he's into audio mixing as well. It's sort of tricks, really. I think if you just do it one time and you figure out how it works, it's really just when people start talking, you just lower everything else because it needs to be clear. I thought it was, you know, pretty obvious, but I guess it isn't. You really just need to make sure that whatever is being said, that it actually has to be heard as well.
Right.
I think that's important.
I noticed in the videos that there's closed caption. Is that YouTube or is that you turning it on?
No, that's actually me. I have I'm Dutch before, so friends of mine, my sister definitely doesn't understand what people are saying. she sometimes like interprets something entirely differently, and I'd be like, no, he's really not saying that. I can't remember anything right now, but and they're often very, very funny. But I subtitle them because my parents always want to show them to friends and stuff, and I just don't want people to get lost. So I subtitle them myself, and you can upload that to YouTube as well. I think it's for international viewers. I think that's it really comes in handy for them, I think.
That's great, because sometimes, even though I may already know, what they're saying, I may have forgotten, and there's something about seeing the actual text that emphasizes what they're saying.
Yeah.
How do you handle timing when it comes to, because I look at some of the, like I watched all your videos recently,
mm-hmm.
and the ones that are trailers, I wonder, are you using footage from the trailers to make your own version of the trailers, or are you waiting till when the movie comes out and then you get all the footage and then you make a trailer? Because then I think after that time, the movie's already come out, so making a trailer, unless it's like for the DVD, isn't as, you know, probably wouldn't get as much attention. How does the whole timing work with when you make it and getting the footage?
Yeah, I I've been doing a lot of TV spots recently, and I really just use trailer footage for that because I think it's also just, well, I don't really download movies. I'm pretty much against that. That's something else. So when you're making a TV spot, you know, having a trailer is really nice because they've already kind of done half the work for you. They've selected the best moments, and you don't have to go through the whole film yourself. But I did trailer for The Dark Knight, which I made after the DVD came out, I believe. Yeah, after the DVD came out. And, it's also just, making something out of a trailer is a lot different from making something out of a movie because, you know, a movie is just so much bigger and you can you can either really mess it up or you can create something entirely new, and I think that's what people are ultimately really looking for on YouTube, you know, something entirely new. So unless you like, I don't really know. I guess you could use the entire movie, but you really need to make something that's not identical to the already existing trailer, because that way you're really just copying other stuff. I don't think that's real good practice, really.
Right. I want to take a moment just to remind anyone who's listening that if you're listening to this just now, that you're listening to Vitter Radio, and I'm interviewing Kays von Dijkhausen, and he is the person who did the YouTube video Cinema 2009. I want to let you know as well that if you want to send in questions, if you have questions yourself, that you can go to tinyurl.com/VRQuestions, and there's a form that's there, and you can enter your questions, and it will send it directly to me, and I'll be able to see it and be able to ask Kays that question. And let's see. I think we actually have a question that just came in.
Oh, cool.
Okay. Okay, this question has to do with asking you about the new trend of making fan-made trailers and TV spots on YouTube and how it's popular
mm-hmm.
today.
I think the sort of the technology to make these kind of things, I think they are really just available for the consumer. I think the last 10 years, people were really able to actually get their hands on, like, editing software. I think it might have been a bit earlier, I think 15 years or something. And, you know, the studios releasing footage online and stuff. I think it kind of opened up a new way of making videos with just stuff you love. I think it's really just because the software is available for everyone now. I think that's really inspired a lot of people to go out and do it themselves, you know. And I think that's also what got me there, because if I'd been born in, say, the 80s, I wouldn't have been able to make something like this, because, you know, there's not... the hardware isn't available for me, and the software isn't available for me, and the footage isn't available for me. So I think it's a really new thing to be making, like, fan trailers and TV spots. And I don't really see why people do it, really, because, you know, if you're making it for yourself, you're really practicing, but if you're uploading it to YouTube, I guess you get a lot of feedback from other people, and that way you're really able to improve. Well, the internet also, of course. just a new way of just improving yourself, really.
Do you watch a lot of videos yourself? Is there stuff that you've seen that's inspired you?
Yeah, actually, I used to really watch a lot on YouTube, but right now I think I'm subscribed to like 20 channels or something. I watch whatever they make. But I've got some close friends from when I started, and one of those friends is, and I'm probably going to say his name wrong now. Wait, Matt.
Okay.
And he made what's it called? I think it's called 2007, A Year for Drama, and it was a compilation of the dramatic pictures of 2007 set to Falling Slowly from the movie Once.
Okay.
And I was actually really moved by that, even though I saw like none of the films he used. But I really liked the style and just the sort of the dramatic idea of looking back on a year, sort of saying goodbye to movies, which is, you know, a really sentimental aspect on its own. So after that, I think that was really what made me want to make my own video, and I contacted a few people, and I was like, you know, it might be fun to do this together, and they were all like, well, no. So I did it on my own, and well, got me here, so I think who's laughing now?
Right. Are you familiar with the work of DJ Earworm?
DJ Earworm. I know the name, but I'm not quite sure. I'm actually looking it up now.
Well, I'll tell you why I mentioned him. DJ Earworm is the person who, he's a DJ, and he...
Oh, yeah,
Okay, so you know.
Yeah, the United States of Pop, I see, or the thing that mashes up all the tracks, right?
Yeah, because I'm thinking, like, in a way, what you're doing is sort of like a movie version of that, although not exactly.
Yeah, I really like his video too. I think it's actually exactly the same, because he kind of reflects on a year of music and I reflect on a year of movies, well, as well as like five tunes, so well, that's not really music. But
yeah.
I really like his style as well. He just sort of, he doesn't skip anything, you know? He's not like I'm using five tracks or something. He just uses everything, which is amazing.
Well, his formula is the top 25 for that year. And
okay.
So he uses the top 25 for that year. One of the things I saw in your description, I didn't want to get confused too much either, but you said in your description something about, I don't know what the number is. I'm totally going to make it wrong because I don't have it in front of me. But this amazing number of movies, and it took so many hours. But
yeah.
You don't necessarily have that many movies in that video, though, right?
No.
Okay.
that's a mistake, actually. But I sort of entered that in the description. It's actually 1 year, 342 movies.
Right.
100 hours of hard work, 7 minutes. But I kind of entered that as a description because I had 342 different trailers of movies, but I actually didn't check if they were all in there. One of them actually being The Hangover, which very, very strangely got entirely cut out. I mean, I had that scattered all the way over there, but it's nowhere to be found in the final thing. And people are actually really mad about that. I mean, there's no Hangover rules and stuff like that. I was like, okay, I'm sorry. But it's actually, I think someone counted it. It's somewhere in the 200s. It's not
wow.
Great. I'm sorry.
But even 200, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's still a lot, but, you know, when you say 342, I think you can just not
right.
Do 342.
I sort of...
I picked it up. They they called it Cinema 2009, 342 movies in 7 minutes, and I was like, well, I can't remove this now because it just looked like they were idiots. So
right.
Just it there.
Well, I just assume that like you watched 342, and from that you selected to create the best part. So I figured.
That's pretty good. I'm gonna use that. Yeah. I'm going to use that.
So one of the things, since we talked about DJ Earworm and what he did with the Billboard Top 25, one of the things he deals with is, like you mentioned earlier, is with a crunch in time when it gets to the moment where it's close to the end of the year, because he has to, like, wait till about a week before the year ends so that the Top 25 can actually be selected, because he's sort of making a guess because the year isn't exactly over. Mm-hmm. So he has to have 1 week of crunch time right before the new year. When you're working on this project, whether rightly or wrongly, how much time are you giving yourself to start working on it? And do you have all the footage together and then you're selecting it towards the end of the year? Are you working it throughout the year?
Yeah, I don't have like a top 25 I'm restricted to, so, well, I wouldn't call it restricted, that sounds a bit weird, but, trailers for 2010 movies are released in August 2009, so I've got a lot of time to get those trailers. With 2009, I just downloaded a release schedule, and I just downloaded whatever movie I could, the trailer for whatever movie I could see on there. And that took me about a week. I'm exaggerating, a week. And when I was editing it back in, I think it was already in February that I was editing it, but I was experimenting back then, but I needed the footage to experiment with. So I already kind of had it, and, as weeks or as months go by, there's new footage, and you download that and you add that. But there were certain films that I really added in last minute because I was like, oh, wait, I didn't got that. So it was, pretty much a guess of, hoping I just got everything, and well, I skipped a few, like, I think Harry Brown isn't in there, which I think is a great film, and I'm really sad that it isn't in there, but, when it's uploaded, you can't change it, so you could, bitch about it, but there's not a whole lot you can do about it, so you can just hope that you get most of the footage right. But right now, I'm actually going, by the month, I'm actually downloading the trailers from January when January ends. So it's a really, I've got a really clear vision of what the month has been. If I skip one or two, I know immediately because I'd be like, wait a minute, I saw Alice in Wonderland and I haven't got a trailer for that. So I can easily adjust now. I'm sort of learning from 2009.
Okay. I want to take a moment again to remind the audience that if they want to send in questions, they can. We actually just got a question, and I don't think I'm going to get this name right. This name is, looks like Sarko Suchas, and he's saying, where are you hoping to see yourself several years from now?
Oh, wow. Several years from now, really. I really hope to get into the trailer business, just editing for, movies that I like. I really want to start out making trailers and maybe when I'm kind of done with trailers, kind of edit movies as well. But in a few years, I think I'd like to see myself in London editing trailers. Yeah, I think that's what I want.
That's great. Something else that I read in your bio, something else that's besides your age that might cause people to disbelieve something about you, is the part that says, but also was screened at a gathering in front of 400 producers, directors, and distributors in the cinema, which you said better than I, in Amsterdam. So how did that happen? I mean, like, you're on YouTube, and then you're talking about 400 producers, directors, and distributors. Is that like the 342 movies, and they're working on exactly 342?
No, that really was 400. It was crazy, really. It's, I think 2 days in advance, I just got an email from this person, and she asked me, like, well, we really liked your Cinema 2009, and it was in Dutch because she was Dutch as well. And would you mind if we showed it, like, at our at our meeting in this cinema? So I was like, okay, wow, you're actually gonna screen my thing in the cinema. That's pretty cool. I didn't even matter, you know, where they were gonna screen it in the cinema. It was just already cool that they were gonna screen it.
Right.
And she was like, well, do you have it on film and stuff? And I was like, no, I've got a file on my computer. I don't actually have it on film, you know. And she told me, you can come over and just burn it on a DVD and we can just show it here. So I was like, okay, cool. So I went there and I entered the lobby and it turned out they actually, like, the entire cinema was actually rented off for this meeting. So it was insane. I actually went to, I don't know how you call that, the main room.
Uh-huh.
In the cinema? Yeah, okay. The main room, which is, it looks like a theater. It's just insane. It's one of the most beautiful cinemas I've ever seen.
Wow.
And there they were just screening my, well, it was insane. I was sitting there in the audience, and I was sitting next to, like, well, 400 producers and distributors, and just watching my work on a big screen and like this, and with just a surround sound. It was insane. I was just going mental, and everyone started clapping. It was the best experience of my life. It was amazing. It really was.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
And then I'm trying to think, like, you're there watching it with these people, and it's getting viewed. Like, what it sounded almost like it was something you didn't expect going into it.
Yeah.
Just to get a sense, like, after it all happened. This person invited you to come to this meeting and show your footage and everything like that. After it happened, did you get a sense of what it was all about and why they picked you and what the purpose was of having you there and your footage and everything?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was really surprised because I thought it was going to be like in some sort of lobby. They'd have this projection screen and they just show it in the background and like five people would be watching and thinking, hey, cool, Terminator or something. But it was really in this giant room full of people. We just started clapping. It was insane. And afterwards, I was just, yeah. It was, I actually had to make a separate edit for it because it was for a Dutch gathering and it's not something I did on purpose, but there's actually just one Dutch movie in there, which isn't even a 2009 movie I discovered afterwards. It's terrible. But, you probably know that Winter in Wartime. Winter in Wartime. So they actually asked me to add some, Dutch footage, really. But, you know, just sitting there and watching something that you've spent months on a big screen and actually just kind of feel it being appreciated. It was just insane. I was like, I want to keep doing this for the rest of my life. I just want people to, you know, look at my work and just get excited over something. It was just the most amazing feeling I've ever had.
Were you able to take anything away from it in terms of, like, something that actually proved that event actually happened? like some kind of program or some kind of
No. Yeah. Well, I wanted to kind of record it with my iPhone, but I was like pretty geeky. I'd be sitting there filming the screen. It'd be pretty crazy. So it's really just a memory, but it's a pretty good memory.
I wanted to ask you this, and we talked a little bit about this before, but I think most people listening would assume that you have either a mother or a father who's in the industry, actually, who's an editor, but that is not the case. You don't even have any family members in the industry?
No. No. It's just really something. I've loved movies all my life, and that was not because my father or my mother were really just taking me to, well, they took me to movies, but it wasn't like, you know, something like they were working in the industry. It wasn't like that at all. It's really just something I did on my own and figured out on my own, which is, I think it's better, because if you figure it out on your own, you really know that this is what you want to do and not something that, you know, your father would like you to do or something.
Now, how is the crater, you know, like when an asteroid hits a planet, it has an impact and there's a crater up around it. What was the impact of the crater of you going to this event with 400 producers and directors? I mean, I take it when you go to school the next day, because you do go to school.
Yeah.
It's not the same. Where, like, when you come home, you know, your environment around you are like, wait, did that really just happen?
Yeah, it was crazy, because people on school, they didn't really know I was doing this, but like random people just came up to me and said, "Hey, I saw your video, it's really cool." And I'm like, "Okay, I've never met you before, this is great." And my parents were also just, they already believed in me, just to say it like that.
That's great.
Yeah, that's great. So they were just really happy. It wasn't like they were finally seeing that I was doing something cool or something. They knew that beforehand, really.
Something editing-wise I wanted to ask you about in terms of your videos, and it's just as unique as you paying attention to the sound levels and stuff, is in the tributes, you do a very, very good job in your credits acknowledging either the movie studios or the fact that, you know, this film was, you know, you're not using this to, you know, take credit for it, but you do very detailed credits. And you know, it's something that I think would lead someone to think that somehow you were involved in the industry, because you did it so well. How did you pick that up?
People, I think they kind of misunderstand that, thinking that, you know, when I say all the rights to all footage remain courtesy of their respective owners, well, I really did that. That people really think that I actually asked for permission, but you need to be really careful with that. You know, this isn't your footage. I mean, you used it, but that doesn't make it yours. And even though I think I kind of read about this, even though the edit is actually copyrighted for me, the footage is still there. So Warner Brothers can just come up and say, you know, you haven't liked since the Harry Potter footage, so we're going to take this down. And I don't want that to happen, especially now when I have 662,000 views. I mean, that'd be crazy if they just do one click and they remove it, you know, forever. So I'm really careful with that. And I think when you clearly state that it's non-profit and not aimed at breaking copyright laws, that I think they're kind of like, well, okay. Because I've actually had people who made some of this footage contact me and saying, like, yeah, it's great. And I was like, oh, you didn't take it down then.
I'm sorry. Say that again. I missed that part about. So you had people actually contact you about it, and did they just like wanted to check in with, like, what was the purpose of them contacting you?
Yeah, well, I've had, like, editors and the director, I think, they've contacted me and they've said, like, well, I really like what you did there. And I was, whoa, this was amazing. One of those people was Martin Koolhoven, which is the director of Winter in Wartime, which is a Dutch movie, you know. For me, that's like, you know, well, Obama kind of coming up to me and saying, good job, you know.
Wow.
For me, that's really big. And also the editor of that film contacted me and said, like, well, you're really doing good, and, you know, that's just amazing. And I usually don't contact the artists themselves because I'm afraid they take it down.
Right.
But I noticed that the band of the first song, which is called If These Trees Could Talk, that they're actually kind of a small band still.
Yep.
So I contacted them. I said, you know, check out what I made. I hope you like it. And they were really supportive. They were like, yeah, we actually saw that a while ago. And
wow.
We really like that. And if you want to use our stuff in the future, just ask. And I was like, oh, wow, okay. I totally did it without your permission. And you actually like me. So that's pretty cool.
That's great. That's great. Because I just had a concern. They were contacting you because they were concerned. But it sounds like the reason they contacted you was just because they wanted to acknowledge you for the work that you did.
Yeah. Well, after all, I'm not, like, making money off of their work, so it's really just a tribute to their work, so I think they're really supposed to like it, so I'm glad they do.
Okay. Again, anyone who's listening, you're listening to Vitter Radio, and if you want to send in a question for a case, you can send it to tinyurl.com/VR, as in Vitter Radio, and questions. That's tinyurl.com/VR questions. We're almost getting near the end of the show. Let me just do a couple of, like, simple announcements. So this is an announcement to let you know about our Facebook fan page. Are you a fan of vidding? Do you vid yourself? Would you like to join a social network page, fan page, and become a fan of vidding? You can do so by going to facebook.com/vidding. You don't have to be a vidder to be a fan, and we cover the latest news, info related to vidding, mashups, and remix work. And let's see. So one of the questions I wanted to ask you, too, is dealing with this issue of trailers in movies. Are you sort of like a movie nut yourself? Like you
yeah, I'm a I'm a pretty big movie geek, really. I joined this Dutch news site which covers films to kind of go to free screenings of movies because I was really paying a lot of money
wow.
to see movies. I actually visit films like 2 times a week, I think, but one of the things as a reward of the Cinema 2009 being screened at that gathering was that they actually gave me this sort of this pass to go to movies for free.
Wow.
Which is insane. And I kind of flash it and I like look to the side as if I don't really care, but every time they kind of use it, I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Wow.
So I can really go to the cinema for free now. And they actually said, well, you know, just get some inspiration. It was really awesome.
How do you deal with the fact that some of the movies that you would be seeing, you aren't even old enough to see on your own?
Yeah, well, that works differently here, really. I think in the U.S. you have to be 17? Is 17? Or are we... Yeah, I think it's
No one under,
rated R.
Yeah, right. I'm trying to play the phrase in my mind, and I think it's no one under 17 is allowed without parental restricted or whatever. Yeah, so 17.
Yeah. Well, over here it's 16, And they don't really mind if you're 14 and you go to the doctor. I think I went to Sweeney Todd when I was 13, and this guy gave me a look like, you really want to do this? And it looked very cool, and I just entered the room, and I was afraid I would never get out. It was one of the bloodiest films I've ever seen. It was me. It's crazy. But, over here you have to be 16, so I think Watchmen, it was 16 here, and I could, I turned 16 in September, so, hey, wait, it's true. Yeah, I turned 16 in September, so I couldn't legally go to Watchmen. Hey, you're right. beat it there.
I would take it like, is it a straight, like, no 16, or like your parents can go and they just explain to you, like, you know, you
should be a trump. No, it's a straight no under 16. It's really... but I think, yeah, they don't really mind, you know. I mean, there's children smoking pot outside, and when you just want to go to the dark night, and I'm like, oh, you're kind of cool, so it's kind of like that.
Tell us about the work that you do at Filmorama. Now, this is cool as well. Not only do you, like, do videos, but you also design websites, and you write for something called Filmorama. And what is that? What is Filmorama?
Filmorama is a Dutch film website, and we write reviews and kind of columns and news about film. And it's not a really how do I say this? It's more kind of like an e-zine, you know, kind of the style and the approach is really film-wise, and not, we wouldn't cover anything that's, you know, about an IMAX theater opening or something. It's really all about film. And I do it, I think, once a week. I have a column there, too, but I always forget it. It's pretty bad. I try to write something twice a week, also just to keep my writing up, because I really like to write as well.
That's great. And speaking of which, since you're doing a, like you said, an e-zine that reviews movies, do you have opinions about this this year's Oscars?
This Oscars? Like I said before, I didn't say it before. I just saw The Hurt Locker, actually, and it was a good film, but I don't really see what all the fuss is about. You know, these kind of films like The Hurt Locker, I try to see them before the hype picks up, because The Hurt Locker was already, it got really good reviews, and I saw the trailer because I was downloading it for Cinema 2009, and I was like, wow, this is a great film, but I couldn't watch it yet because it wasn't released yet. But now it's, now the hype picked up, and you sort of get expectations for films that, you know, they can never meet, really. So
right.
I try to watch them before this kind of stuff happens, but, well, I didn't. And I wasn't really blown away by it. I was kind of surprised Ralph Fiennes was in there, and Guy Pearce as well, because I thought it was a really small movie.
Right.
But there were actually some... there was some star power in it.
Yeah.
But, for the Oscars, I'm not really a big fan of these kind of these award shows, because I usually never agree with them.
Yeah.
I stayed up for the Oscars last year because it's like 2:30 a.m. here when they finally start, so you really need to make a lot of coffee and tea and just, you know, sit it out. But this year I really can't do that because it's like on a school day, so it's like in sitting. For the Oscars going, I think Avatar, I think that should win like visual stuff, but not like best film, stuff like that, because I don't really see it. I mean, I like it, but I don't really see how a film like Avatar can win Best Film, even though people think that it's going to win that.
Right.
I don't really see that. But, you know, I think I have my prediction somewhere. Oh, yeah, I have them somewhere. Let me just look them up. I was actually kind of bummed that some of my favorite scores of last year actually didn't make it into the soundtrack nominations. Which one was that? I'm thinking of them now.
And I
forget.
I have the nominees, if that helps. I don't know if it will or not.
Oh, no, I got them here. Tyler Bates for the Watchmen score. I really liked that one. It was really, really unique. And it didn't actually get nominated, and I was really bummed because I was like, oh, you're really going to pick James Horner's, you know, soundtrack because it just, it's identical to Titanic, really. It's
right.
Really identical.
Right.
I mean, you could, like, hear tunes, and you'd be like, wait a minute, is that Celine Dion?
Right.
And especially that last song that was Leona Lewis, man, I could just cry. Like, you just sat, like, 2.5 hours, and you were like, mate, and then the song comes up, and you were like, wait, what? It was almost as disappointing as Avril Lavigne doing the end credits for Alice in Wonderland last night, which, I'm sorry, but it's a terrible film. I really don't like it. But the Oscars, let me see. Yeah. I kind of expect the Hurt Locker to win the kind of the direction,
yeah,
the editing, and the film stuff.
Right.
But for what I hope is that they don't actually win editing, because I'm really not into that, like, a fast, gritty handshake, you know, handshake, what did I say, hand cam stuff, you know. The, I mean, what I really like about Avatar is that everything is just so visible. You can just see everything.
Right.
And with the Hurt Locker, it's just really things exploding and, you know, moving a lot. I don't really like that. But, well, let me just make...
well, one thing...
Yeah, I hope that... well, it's the only thing I'm going to say about it is that I hope that Stanley Tucci, do I say that right? Stanley Tucci?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, I hope he wins for The Lovely Bones, because even though they made him, like, way too creepy, you could really feel that he was, like, wrong, but you couldn't really tell what was wrong about him, which I really liked.
Yeah.
I really liked his performance there.
That's great. You're a man of after my own heart in terms of paying attention to the scores, and because I'm a soundtrack fan myself. I have a friend who runs a blog called SoundtrackGeek.com, and he posts a lot of reviews of soundtracks, and you can actually even listen to some of the soundtracks, and for the work that you do with trailers and stuff, soundtracks are very important in adding to the visual element of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I listen to a lot of soundtracks myself. I don't really like the big, epic things. I really like it when composers do something new. Even though I really like Michael Giacchino's score for Up. I really love that. I mean, that movie gets me crying in 5 minutes. It's amazing. So every time I see that sort of, oh my God, I weep. It's amazing. And it's, that music is just so beautiful. And I hate it when people don't, like, notice. Because even though they really do, because it adds to the experience, when I say, like, wow, that soundtrack was really good, they're like, wow, you were paying attention to that? And I'm like, oh, well, of course I'm paying attention to that. But it's pretty frustrating when you find out that people don't really listen to that, even though it's amazing.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, great. So let's see now. We have about 5 minutes left. I'm going to repeat the address for sending in questions, just in case there's any last-minute questions. You can go to tinyurl.com/vrquestions. And again, if you are a fan of bidding, you can join our Facebook fan page, by going to facebook.com/vidding. And vidding is spelled V-I-D-D-I-N-G. And let's see. Also, if you are a vidder, and not just a fan, but you also like to be part of a community, there's a community website for vidders at vidders.net. And that's simply V-I-D-D-E-R-S.net. And I believe if you go on Google and you search vidders, it's like the third link. And it's a really great site that I help to manage, and it's got a lot of really cool features. It's also tied to our Facebook page. So let's see if there's anything else. One question I had, which is like sort of an obvious question, is do you have any advice for someone who wants to start out editing the way that you do, let's say starting from the embryonic stage? Because considering you're 16, I figure that, you know, they probably have to start at the embryo, the advice you can give them.
I think what you really need to do is, you know, you really need to do it for yourself. I mean, if you don't enjoy it, it's not going to look good. You really need to enjoy every single thing, you know, from getting the footage to, you know, experimenting and finding out that, you know, 99% of what you do doesn't actually work. It's frustrating, but in the end, it all pays out. I think if you just keep experimenting and just keep showing people, that's a really important one. You really need to get feedback from, well, YouTube is a good way to do that. But, you know, even if you have a sort of a big release you want to do, you need to ask friends of yours to kind of give you advice on what works and what doesn't, because when you look at stuff 100 times, you often don't really see them anymore. So I think you really need to ask for help from other people, because, it's ultimately them who you're doing it for, as well as yourself, but it's really them you're doing it for. So if you just enjoy it, and if you just enjoy it, then it all works out in the end, I think.
And in terms of, like, one of the things I seem to think about with relation to vidding, because I think it takes so much time, that I'm thinking it's possibly very important to have some kind of routine or work structure. Have you found that you've evolved in your way of being able to manage time so that you can not waste time, considering time is such like an intensive part of the process?
Yeah, well, wasting time is kind of part of it. I don't think you can make a video without wasting time, because I worked on Cinema 2009, as I said, in February, but, you know, what I came up with then, it didn't come close to what it eventually became. I think if you just, there's not really a routine, there's more kind of a technical routine, you know, the way you get the footage and the way you set up your perfect sort of way of doing it, that can help you.
Right.
But it's really just, you know, I think it's just, I don't think you can, you know, there are people trying to do that with trailers, and it doesn't work. You really need to do something new every time. So I think if you have a routine, that's really bad, because it kind of blocks. It's you're setting up limitations for yourself. I don't think you need to do that. I don't like that.
Okay. So I think we're about to run out of time for the show, and we're about to end. So there's some amount of seconds that I haven't heard from the speakerphone, but I just want to thank you for being on the show. And I know we talked about this earlier, and, you know, hopefully, you know, we can have you back if some really amazing things happen as a result of the work that you've done on Cinema 2009. And and it's great to be able to hear your viewpoint and share this with people. This particular podcast, while it's live now, is going to be archived and can be shared through Twitter and Facebook. So if you're listening to this and you really like this and you think there's someone who you think might be interested as well, you can share it through Twitter, Facebook, and you can even do a one click to iTunes and subscribe to this as a podcast. So we're about to end the show. Thank you very much, Case, and thank you for being a guest.
Yeah, I really liked it.